Hey, what is up? Welcome to the Hypothetical Comedy Podcast. I am Funky Sam Medina.
And I am Athena Rodriguez.
And we're here with comedian Jeremy Wagner. What's up, Jeremy?
What's up? What's up? What's up?
How you doing, man?
Getting by, I guess you could say.
Yeah, hell yeah.
I'm alive.
That's good. That's
I haven't been shipped off to jail for, like, murdering my mom or anything like that.
Oh, damn.
Not yet. I'm just kidding.
No, they're just sent to the mental institution.
That's good. That's good. Hell yeah, man. Well, I think we should start that all over. I don't want it to be
the spooky go back to that podcast where he admitted he was going to kill his mother.
Yeah. Yeah, there was like some country song because that's all we get for radio stations in my neighborhood. And the lady says the same thing. She's like, if you murder somebody, then I'll be your alibi and we're riding together. I'm like, you shouldn't even say that. Like, that lady's gonna get you one day and it's not gonna happen.
Hell yeah, that's cool, man. Hey, so when we met you over the pandemic, you were a world traveler. You were in Vietnam and stuff. What was, I guess, your travels like? How did that begin for you?
Well, like my friend, like this guy that I met at the comedy at the open mics in Dallas where I used to go, he just like calls me up on like a Saturday night and he's drunk and he's like, "Hey, dude, I'm really bored. Do you want to come over?" I'm like, "No, it's raining and like it's past 7:30. I'm already drunk myself. I'm not driving." And he's like, "Well, I'm so bored that I'm looking at flight tickets, and I found one for $500 to go to Bangkok." And I was like, "Well, what are they normally? They're like $1,500 or something." He's like, "If I don't get anybody to come over to my house, then I'm gonna go to Bangkok." And I'm like, "Okay." And then like a couple of days later, I see him at the open mic and I'm like, "What happened, dude?" He's like, "Oh, I bought my ticket. I leave out in like a month." And he left and he was gone for maybe like 3 months. And we were talking back and forth on Skype and stuff like that. And he's telling me all the fun things that he's doing, how he's working 8-hour days for a free place to sleep and food. And gets to hang out on the beach with all these tourists all the time. And so he made it sound really good. I mean, not that it wasn't when I got there, but he made it sound really good. And I was thinking, you know, like, I don't really do a lot of things by myself. So I probably would never really go travel by myself. Because I'm an alcoholic and I've made bad decisions and I don't want to get in trouble in a foreign country. So maybe I can go with him and that way we can, you know, watch each other's back so we stay out of trouble and things like that. So that was the plan. And then I bought my ticket and I call him up the next day and I'm like, "That was really hard to buy the ticket." And like, I cried. I was drunk. I don't think those two things like were causing each other, but they did happen and I was really drunk. And, so I called him up. I'm like, "Hey, dude, I bought my ticket. I'll be there on like April 17th. And he's like, "Oh, dude, I've been meaning to call you because I'm coming back to the States at that time to start a business with my dad." And then like I freaked out again because like I was going to be by myself, like so far away from anybody who can bail me out of jail. And then that was it, really. Like that guy like still lives in Bangkok and I was there for almost 8 years and we still never met up over there.
Holy shit, you were there for 8 years?
Wow. Yeah, it was supposed to be when I left, it was I originally told myself I was like 3 months, and then yeah, it became 8 years.
What was it about yeah. Bangkok that like drew you in for you to be there for so long?
Oh, I was only in Bangkok for like 2 weeks, and then I went to a couple of islands like in the south part of Thailand. And then my visa was over after a month. So I had to go to Malaysia. And then I stayed in Malaysia for 3 months just drinking alcohol because nice. It was cheap. Like, I think the reason that I wanted to stay was the cost of living. Like, I think I typically would spend about $800 or $1,000 a month And I lived in a 3-bedroom apartment with two friends. We had a pool. I never went swimming in it, but we had a pool. And yeah, I worked about 20 hours a week most of the time. And then I had money to go out to open mics every night. And, we were like, there's about 15 or 20 comedians in the city in Vietnam. And, so every weekend there was a show. There was like 4 mics every week. And so stage time was great. Not having to work my ass off to have nothing was also great.
Yeah, no, that's understandable. Were you so you were bouncing around for 8 years? Were you in Vietnam the longest?
Yeah, I wasn't really bouncing around too much. Like, I stayed 3 months in Malaysia, and then I went to Vietnam and basically stayed there the rest of the time. I mean, I went to like a couple of other countries. I went to Cambodia for a couple of 6 months or so, like that. In between, like during COVID and stuff like that. But yeah, I was in Vietnam for the longest.
Wow. Were you like stuck there because of COVID, or were you like, was it better off for you to be there?
Yeah, I wasn't stuck there. I just wanted to stay.
Nice.
So, they kept telling everybody to go, to leave. You're going to get trapped inside the country. And like, okay, I could be sitting at home spending $50 a day, or I could be sitting at home spending $15 a day. Like, and at that time I got a bunch of, like, I was working for a company before I left, and I was there for like 12 years. And I went in and I told them, like, hey, I want to go traveling. You know, I'm understanding that my job might not be here when I get back, and that's fine with me. So they let me still work for them for probably 7 of the 8 years.
Oh, wow. And
during COVID, I was getting like 50 hours a week at like $18 an hour. So at the end of it, I had like 12 grand in my bank account, and then awesome. Drugs. I don't know, but it disappeared. I don't know where that money went, but it went somewhere.
Dang.
Wow. That's cool though. I mean, it must've been like, you know, living just a high life, you know, because you had a well-paying job and it wasn't very expensive there.
Well, no, I'm still like my job that I said from the Texas. That's where it was based in Texas, and they would only send me like 1 week a month. So in the beginning, I stayed for 6 months. Like when I first came over, I stayed for 6 months, and then I ran out of money, and I bought a plane ticket to go back to Bangkok to meet that friend that I originally planned to leave with. And he's like, yeah, I can get you a job. You can stay at my house, and you know, I'm not going to charge you rent or anything, so you could save some money. And so I bought a plane ticket, and then I found like this dude, here or in Vietnam that was like, yeah, I got a job for you. So instead of going to Bangkok, I stayed in Vietnam and found a teaching job, and still basically working 20 hours a week. That's for cool. $20 an hour.
Wow. Nice.
But the Texas job, yeah, that was good. Cause like I'd get a week and they were like, we're busy. We need like, we'll send you like 50 hours. And I'm like, all right. And that's like $1,000. So, you know, 3 months I did. Like every week I did 50 hours of work for them during the COVID thing. And so that was nice. But again, I was in the house. I couldn't do anything.
Yeah. What was it like in Vietnam during COVID? Like, was everything shut down like it was here? And were people like using masks and stuff?
Yeah. Most people in Vietnam wear masks anyways for like pollution reasons.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, people like, I'm wearing my mask, but like I smoke. So I would just, hey, I'm not going to wear my mask and try to smoke at the same time.
Yeah.
Like I'm just staying away from people, you know, 10, 15 feet away from people. And I'm smoking over in the corner.
I'm sure that's safe, because that's what people do here. You know, you just kind of stand away, smoke a cigarette, whatever.
I don't know how many times Vietnamese people walked over to me. Because they see me without a mask. They walked over to me. They got within like 5 feet of me. They removed the mask. They say, "Where's your mask?" Like, you can't take off your mask and ask me where my mask is. Like, right? Where's your
Especially
mask?
Especially that close to you.
It's so weird.
They could ask you that from further away. Where's your mask? It's on the floor. Where the fuck do you think it is?
They're crazy over there.
Did you learn any other languages? Like, do you speak Vietnamese or anything?
No, it's so hard. Like, they have like tones and pitch.
Yeah, they do.
So, like, in America, if we yell at somebody, that means we're angry, right? Well, like, some of their words have like an up pitch or an up tone. So there's like words like ban, depending on the, I don't know what those things are called, the little markings above the letter. Like the letter A has like 7 or 8 different sounds that it makes. And like my first girlfriend, she's like, "I'm going to teach you Vietnamese." I'm like, "Okay." And she's like, "Say ban, 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 ban means, it means you. It could mean table. It could mean many different things." But she'd say ban. So I'm like, "Ban." And she's like, "Ban." I'm like, "Ban." And we did that for like a half an hour each night. And I still could not hear the difference of anything she was trying to tell me. She's like, "No, say it like this." And I'm like, "I am saying it like that. And it's still coming out like that."
Yeah, my friend, he studied Mandarin for so long, for years and years and years. And he was telling me that they do things like with their tongue that we don't even do in our language. Mm. And he had to like practice moving his tongue in certain ways to speak the language well.
I don't know this for sure, but someone told me that Vietnamese is a stomach language. So instead of using your tongue and things like that, you're pushing air out of your stomach and up through your mouth.
Wow.
Very guttural.
That is crazy. So,
I can do some wicked things with my tongue as well. But...
All right. Well, we don't need to do that now.
We'll just edit that out. That's cool,
though. That's fine. I'm just kidding. That's cool, man. And then what brought you home? What brought you back to the U.S.?
Well, my grandma passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, when I got back, my grandma passed away. My stepdad was like on crutches and he had just went to the hospital and was having some problems. And they ran all these tests on him. Like his feet like swelled up and he couldn't walk without crutches. And so I stayed around to kind of help my mom deal with him. Yeah. And then he passed away, like, I think it's about 4 months later. Oh. And so now it's just my mom. I mean, I have my brother. He lives about 15 minutes away, but he's busy with his family, his kids and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I'm supposedly helping my mom, but
supposed to be.
Yeah. We just argue a lot.
It happens, you know, under enclosed quarters like that when you're like all that. Like you said, you're not working, so you're kind of on each other.
It doesn't work either. We're just like, we're both like bums.
It happens.
But I'm sure that your mom appreciates having you there. You know, in some capacity, I feel like that it's nice not to be in an empty house.
Yeah, she's like, "Hey, did you buy some weed this week?" No.
Oh, dang. She's like, "Why are you here?"
Yeah. Go out and fix something.
So where are you from originally? Are you from Louisiana?
When I was growing up, like high school, I was born in Michigan. And then I think around 3 months old or 6 months old or something like that, we moved to Louisiana. And then we stayed in Louisiana till I was like 8 and we moved back to Michigan. And then we stayed in Michigan till I was 16 and then we moved back to Louisiana and I graduated high school in Louisiana.
Wow, back and forth a lot. Michigan and Louisiana specifically, that's pretty cool.
That must have been a lot. That's a lot of moving.
Yeah, I hate moving too. I hate it
too. Yeah, and it's like a whole different like place. Like, I mean, you know, Michigan has snow, Louisiana... they don't have enough snow.
Oh my gosh.
Oh wow. So like yeah, like different worlds almost.
Yeah. People talk strange down here as well. Like my brother, because he went to school down here for, I don't remember what grade it was, but his grade, like he was in, I don't know, let's say eighth grade. They made him learn French because Louisiana was settled by the French.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So there's a bunch of words that like you would look at them and you're like, how do you pronounce that word? Nobody knows. Oh, shit.
Well, that's fun. At what point did you like get into stand-up comedy, like just as a fan?
I started going to open mics in 2012. I think I was always like a fan of comedy growing up and stuff like that. And I never even thought about it. Like living in Dallas, you know, big city, has lots more things to do. And I never thought about going to open mic. And then my friend was like, hey, you should go to open mic one day. And then I went to like four of them and I wussed out and didn't wait around for my turn and got drunk and left. And then, like
they're probably still calling your name. Jeremy Wagner.
One time I was there. They're like, is okay, coming to the stage is Penelope. And they waited like 30 seconds and nobody went to the stage. So I just walked up there and told them I was Penelope.
Nice. You look like a Penelope.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I did karaoke open mic one time there. He was like, what song are you going to sing? And I'm like, I don't need any backing track. I'm just going to acapella this. And I did 7 minutes of jokes.
Oh my gosh. That's one of my dreams. I want to do that so bad. Badass. I don't have the nerve to do that, but I really want to.
And that was like in the very beginning. I don't know. Maybe I had been doing it for a year and a half at the most. Or
how was the reaction to it?
Yeah,
a couple people, because it was like my local bar right down the street from my house, and my friend, she lived a couple of houses down from me, and so we would just walk there and get drunk and then walk home. So it was like nice. People that kind of knew me because I went there all the time. And a couple people were like, oh, good job, you know, which is a lot better than when comedians tell you great set, you know, because the person probably actually listened. The comedian didn't.
Yeah, they never do.
I listen.
I do sometimes.
Or they're like, good joke. And they're all pissed off because they didn't mind it.
I say good set usually. But if they have a good set, I'll say good set. And if they have a shitty set, sometimes I'll still say good set.
I just go outside and smoke, and then I don't have to worry about telling anybody anything.
I just fist bump them. They go, how was my set? And I go, oh, sorry, I was temporarily deaf. I didn't hear anything. I was deaf. How long was your set? 4 minutes? Yep, that's how long. Oh,
gosh. I just heard this ringing.
So what was it that made you want to do the open mics?
Yeah.
I think it was my friend Brandon. Like, he was just some guy. He's got like a peg leg. He doesn't have like a pirate ship because he's broke. But like, if he had money, he would have a pirate ship. And he's a
landlubber pirate.
Yeah. And I think he used to just come over to my house and get trash drunk and then just drive home. And I was always like concerned about his driving ability, but I never stopped him. And I think it was him that suggested that we go to it. And we went to the first one, me and him and another dude, Robbie. And we went there and we were waiting about 2 hours. And I was getting bumped down because the open mic, I remember one time I waited there from 5, 6 o'clock after work. And I went on last at 1:30 in the morning.
Oh, crap. I hate that. I hate
so the worst. It was like a 45, 50 people open mic. And if you were new, like within the first 6 months, I always got bumped.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember those days too.
Yeah, we used to get here.
Local mics. Go, you know, I'll put you up in a couple people. And then a couple people later, I'll put you up in a couple more people. And it just, before you know it, it's like, 12:30, 1 o'clock.
You're drunk as fuck.
And you're like, oh, I could have got here 4 hours later than I did.
Yeah, that's, I'm always drunk because it's like, I can't sit at the bar and not drink.
I can if I'm broke.
Yeah. Even for me, I would have bought like a little cheap bottle of whiskey or something and drank it in the car.
That's a good idea.
But it was, yeah. I remember because I would leave work at 5, get out of work at 5, and it's about a 20-minute drive with no traffic, but it's 5 o'clock rush hour in Dallas. So maybe it'd take me about 30 minutes, 45 minutes to drive there. And I'd get there about 5:30, maybe 6 o'clock, let's say. And the list didn't come out till 8. So we'd be sitting there for 2 hours and they'd put the list out. And then I'm like, number one, number five, I'm in the top 10, whatever. And I would go like, 3 hours later, like,
dang. Ugh.
I don't think the lady Patricia like really liked me too much. I'm not really sure why. But yeah, she was the girl who run the open mic, and I don't think she really liked me.
Dang. Well, when you did initially go up for the first time, how was it?
I mean, I continued to go back.
That's true.
Yeah, I think after that first time, I never passed on the opportunity to go on stage. I guess it was just like I got like some laughs, but it was like, you know, you go there and it's all open mic comedians. There's a couple of guys who might be on shows or something. Everybody laughs at abortion jokes and, you know, dead baby jokes and shit. So that's what I was telling, like shock humor, you know. It wasn't really, I mean, I guess I still do that, but it wasn't
like, yeah,
it wasn't like a joke, you know. It was just, I don't know,
getting a feel for it.
Yeah, we all have to find our voice and kind of get into our groove, and it takes mm-hmm. it takes people, you know, longer than others, and some people get it pretty quick and some people don't. It took me a long time to really feel comfortable in my skin, probably over 10 years to really just feel comfortable on stage where I'm like in the moment and I'm not like having a panic attack in my head.
I have to have 2 beers for that to happen, to where I just don't, not really concerned with it. Or, I mean, you know, like you're on stage and you're just talking and it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. I mean, I still have my prepared material, but it's much different now for me because I can go off course if I need to. If mm-hmm. I notice something in the room, I can talk about that. You know, I can play off of somebody laughed at something. I can play off of that a lot more. And you know, it took me a long time to get to that place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, either I'm too drunk and I don't remember what I'm gonna say, or like, again, 2 beers, I think, is where it's like the sweet spot for me.
I feel like that's a sweet spot.
That's cool. Yeah, I've been trying to not drink before I go up because I feel like I'm more sharp and more clear-headed if I don't drink.
I just try to avoid smoking weed like 4 hours before the show. And
well, I'm good with that.
Yeah, no, weed always makes me forget shit.
Yeah, no, that's weed notoriously makes people forget shit.
I remember this one kid, he would write his set on his wrist, and like, he's like, yeah, you do that so nobody sees you looking at a piece of paper. But then he's like on stage and he's like,
I've seen people do it like on their hands, on a napkin, on a coaster.
Some weird shit.
Yeah, I knew this one guy. He would just write it on like, it wasn't like, it was just a regular notebook paper, but he wrote the letters probably 2 inches wide and just like this piece of paper with these big letters on it. And he would set it on the ground and just look at it.
Oh, wow.
I used to really enjoy doing the Zooms because I was able to have like a set list on the screen, a timer on the screen. I was mm-hmm. super spoiled.
Yeah, I felt really good coming out of Zoom. Like for me, I would go to open mic and, you know, same people there all the time every week. So they always tell you, you know, build that 5 minute set. And I would go to the open mic probably after a month of telling, or, you know, 4 weeks or four mics of telling the same jokes to the same people, I always tried to bring new stuff. So same thing happened with COVID. Like, you know, everybody, you're seeing everybody every day in the open mics. So I was writing all kinds of things or just pulling stories from the past and like trying to punch them up and make them funny. So I think I got a lot of material out of COVID.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it was a good place to do that, because like you said, we're in front of the same people almost every week. So you do kind of got to pump out new material just to, so people don't tune you out.
And I don't really write. Like, I mean, I do, I'll write down ideas and things like that. But once I get like an idea that I want to expand on, I'll just go and rant on it like three or four times and then start, you know, recording it. And after you record it a couple of times, then I run it through my phone and it transcribes it from words to text. Whoa. And I don't have to type anything. I mean, at that point, you know, I got a Word document that's got a bunch of sets that I've performed this joke in. And then, you know, I pick and choose the things I want to keep and put it all down on paper.
Wow. That's a really cool process.
Yeah, I don't like writing.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I can't sit down and write. I've tried to do that so many times and it just, I can't. I'm more of an inspired writer. Where like an idea will pop in my head, or I'll say something funny in a conversation, and I'll be like, I got to use that. I got to write that down. I got to put that in my skit, as they say.
Yeah, my uncle, my uncle used to do that. He'd call me up. He's like, "How's the comedy going?" I'm like, "That's all right, you know." And he's like, "Oh, I got a joke for you." He sends me like a link to a guy playing like a guitar and singing this parody song. And he's like, "You should do this in your bit." I'm like, dude, I don't know how to play fucking guitar. Like,
he's already doing it.
Exactly. And he's like, "You're in Vietnam. Nobody's going to know."
Oh my gosh. No. They're going to know.
They're not going to know. Yeah. Like, there was a couple people that like stole jokes. Like, this one guy stole a joke from SNL.
And, oh, wow.
Like, we told him, we're like, "Hey, dude, they just did that joke." Like, and he was like, "No, I wrote that." I'm like, "Okay, dude, whatever."
You go, "Then why was your punchline live from New York on Saturday night?" Well, that's crazy. What was the comedy scene like in Vietnam?
Yeah.
I would say great compared to like Dallas, where I started at. Like I said, we had some ups and down times, you know, like maybe you didn't get an audience or you lose a venue or whatever. But for the most of the time, it was like 3-4 open mics a week. And, like there was just the like 15 to 20 comedians. So you'd go to the open mic, there'd be like maybe 10 people there and you're just like hanging out with everybody.
Was there shows or just like open mics?
Yeah. So like all of the comedians would find a bar or find a place they could, that would allow them to put on a show. And we did shows.
Was there a lot of where you were? Was there a lot of like tourism? I guess not, because a lot of time was pandemic time.
Well, I got to Vietnam in 2015.
Oh, okay. So yeah, you were there for quite a while.
So, pandemic. Yeah, I came back after 4 years for a visit, and then COVID happened when I went back.
Wow.
So yeah, we had, I think there was 6 lockdowns. Some of them were only like locking down parts of the city or locking down people that have tested positive or whatever. But some of them, they actually closed bars and restaurants for indoor service. So there was a couple of 3 months, like 3 months, and then they'd open everything back up and realize they probably shouldn't have did that. And then they would close it. Wow. So I think we spent like 3 months and then maybe 6 months, like in the house, like where it didn't do anything. And at one point that like we couldn't even go buy groceries or anything. They were just like having the military bring groceries to our house.
Holy
Like
crap.
here's a 50-pound bag or 50-pound bag of rice. Like you guys got three people. This should last you a week. Like I hate rice.
Oh, like they just bring you like rations and shit.
Yeah.
Like this is what we got: rice, potatoes, and whatever these vegetables are. Wow. Maybe some
And
milk if you're lucky.
I don't think like again, I didn't leave the house, so I was always at home, but I don't think they like were dropping food off at like a regular time, you know, like, oh, we're gonna come back every week or something. I think it was like one time we got food and that was it. And we've been
Oh,
like in the house for 3 months or something.
wow.
But we could still get beer and then
Well, that's
like
good. That's good. That's all that matters.
My weed dealer, he like he lived in our house like he was my housemate's cousin, and he just slept on our couch because his grandma got COVID and he couldn't go home, so he stayed
Well,
on the couch, got locked into our house, and then like we're inside for 3 months, and he calls
wow.
the weed man, and the weed man was an ambulance driver, so he was allowed to go into different parts of the city that everyone else couldn't go into. And he just like showed up at our house and brought us weed, dressed as
Wow.
a doctor.
That's convenient.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
That's wild.
You're like, out of the whole place, you probably had like the most happening like living situation.
Yeah, we had those little, you know, the little tiny square pieces of paper that you put on your tongue. We had some of that as well. So
Oh,
we were doing pretty good, like staying at home. I
yeah.
mean,
Sounds like it. Sounds like you found something to keep yourself
you don't have
busy.
to tell us twice.
My housemate didn't like me smoking, so she made me smoke on the patio. So like if it was daytime, I was on the patio. Like it was
Yeah,
that
you were pretty much on
was
the patio, I think, when we saw you on the
Yeah. Pretty
Zoom.
much, yeah, 'cause smoking cigarettes.
How did you get into all the Zoom comedy stuff?
I joined some group like right whenever the first lockdown happened. There was some Facebook group, I think it was called How to Be a Comedian, and it started with a 30-day writing challenge. So I did that, and that was like somebody in that group was like, hey, there's another group, Displaced Comedians. And then I found that one. But I don't even think those guys, because that was the Hot Breath or the.
Yeah, I remember them. Hot breath, yeah.
No, it wasn't Hot Breath. It's this guy named Ian Gutowski or something like that.
Oh, I don't think
And
I know who that is.
so that would, I think. That one was before even Joel started his the Hot Breath or whatever, where he would give the word of the day.
Yeah, that was fun, actually. That was a good concept. And then people would like win and they get a little graphic with their name on it and shit.
Yeah, I didn't even get a graphic. Like I won one of the first couple of times that I did it, and like
Oh, nice.
he didn't give me a graphic. He just like invited me onto the Zoom. And we talked a little bit, and then I got a screenshot of the Zoom.
There
So,
you go. That's good. You got something, I guess.
yeah,
Hell yeah. That's
I don't
cool.
think anybody gave me the respect that I deserved from that win, but you know,
Hey, in retrospect, you can go probably make yourself a graphic now. Like, look what I got now, motherfuckers.
no, I gotta go download Photoshop and that's.
Was it super hard, like a super pain in the ass for you to do the Zoom comedy because of your time zone? I know it
No.
was like around the world, like almost all the time zones were, but it was mostly the US shows, like mostly US mics.
Yeah, I would wake up at like 8 in the morning, and my teaching job was most of the time at like the evening hours, like 6 or 7 or something like that. And so waking up at 8, and I just sat around and drank coffee for 4 hours on the balcony smoking cigarettes and did four open mics.
Nice. That's cool, man. That's the life.
So yeah, some of my jokes like you know, it'd be like a day or something to where it's like, all right, that's a solid joke. We can move on from there and come back to it later.
That's great.
So I was just like cycling things like, oh, this, I haven't said this joke in a long time, so I'll just bring it back. And so it always seemed like I had new stuff. Like most of the time I do have like just some little small jokes or whatever that are always new, no matter what. But I was getting new jokes like every couple of days.
Love that.
That is awesome.
And I did that Scott Porteous, he had like the workshop, and that was pretty cool. He would give you like a random word, and then you had to write jokes about this random topic, and then you would go to the Zoom and you would meet, and there'd be like four people, and they all got random topics. So you'd do up to 5 minutes on this random topic. And then they would give you like feedback. And then after everybody got their turn to do the random topic, then you could do 5 minutes of your own material. And I would just sign up. Like he's like, we got an open spot for Wednesday. Anybody want it? I'm like, yeah, sure. I don't got nothing to do. So I'll write 5 minutes jokes about tow trucks. Like I had a lot of weird topics. Like, I don't think any of the stuff that I wrote for those workshops actually got said on stage. I mean, maybe they did.
It's interesting though to do that because you definitely look at things in a way that you like never would have looked at it before, you know?
Yeah, and then even with the other people, 'cause like you'd write 5 minutes of jokes, and then like somebody would say something like, "Damn, dude, that's genius. How come I didn't think of that?" And like they would take it in such a like different direction than what you had already taken it.
Totally. That's cool. Do you have like a favorite? Do you have like a favorite show that you performed on, or like maybe like one of your favorites, or a favorite experience at a show?
No, and not that I can remember.
Oh,
I
that's
guess getting money. Like I remember the first time I got paid, it was like, I think it wasn't even a comedy. I mean, like if, I tried to make it funny, but it was like a storytelling event or whatever. And like random people would get up there and tell the story about when they pissed their bed in camp or something like that. And,
Wow, nice.
So the guy get is like 7 minutes you get to tell your story, and then at the end he gave us all $7, and I was like, holy shit, dude, that's like $1 a minute. That's pretty good if I could do 60 minutes. And then he's like and then I got to think about it. I was like, yeah, but I started open mics 7 years ago, and I probably went to at least 100 mics every year. And so if I spent 1 hour at the open mic, which typically it was like 2 or 3 hours at the open mic, then I basically got paid a penny per hour, for my beginning payment. So like I was excited to get paid, and then I sat there and thought about it. And I was like, wow, that's a lot of hours that I put in to get $7.
Hell yeah. It's $1 an hour though. That's actually, I really think that's funny. The first thing you got paid was $1 or $1 a minute.
Yeah.
Hell
Well,
yeah.
I mean, like I said, that I got $100 2 weeks ago. I was only supposed to do 15 minutes, and he was like, I'm not going to light you. Don't worry about it. Just do 15 or 20. I did 23.
Nice. Hell yeah. Yeah, far removed from the days of getting $1 a minute. Walking out with
Hell
$7.
yeah.
That's cool. Hell yeah. I know you said that you're kind of far away from any comedy out there where you are now in Louisiana, but how's the scene out there?
Well, like when I first got here, I found an open mic, but I went there and there it was all like people playing guitar and singing cover songs.
Oh,
And
wow.
I was like, I recently went to this other music open mic type thing. And I was like, hey, dude, can I get on the list? And he's like, I was like, can I do comedy? And he's like, are you funny? And I'm like, well, I got this comedy in Cambodia shirt, so I think I'm kind of funny. And he's like, all right, let me see. I've never had anybody ask that before, so let me work out all the details and I'll get back to you. Oh, wow. And I sat there for like 3 hours and the dude didn't even let me go on stage.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, here comes another guy singing a Hank Williams song. You know, like, write your own shit, dude. Like, you're singing somebody else's song. This is like crap. And you can't let me tell some dick jokes. You know, that's pretty funny.
That's crazy, though. Did you ever get up on any of those music mics? Or you just give up on like that one?
Well, that was just one. Like I had, that was a new one that started that I found online that I went to a couple of months ago. But when I first got here, yeah, I found out there's this open mic at this brewery and I went there. And that first night, there was a couple of people that did comedy. Like there was a couple of guys that could do it. And so they did, the guy's like, you want 15? It's like, oh shit. Oh, okay. I planned 5, but okay. Yeah, I can do 15.
That's a good moment.
And so that the first open mic was basically music. I was the only comedian performing. And then, I found out this other place and they do like a once a month. And so that open mic is only once a month. It's like the first Thursday of every month. And then we found this other, it said open mic slash show. So like they have like 3 or 4 people go up and do 5 minutes. And then they have like 3 comedians do like 15 minutes each. And maybe like the last guy will do 20 or 30 or something. So I went to the open mic and in the beginning is like, you guys got any experience? And I started just rattling on about all this crap experience. Yeah, it started in Dallas in 2012, blah, blah, blah. And he kind of didn't really listen to me. And then I did my 5 minutes. He's like, oh shit, dude, you're pretty good. You know, you guys want to come do a spot in the show next week. So now I get to do that show every other month.
Oh, nice. Wow. That's cool.
So there's it's only like four like getting, or five comedians here.
It's like getting passed.
Yeah, but it's a like a brewery show.
Yeah, that's cool. Also, oh, there's not a lot of comics in the area.
Mm-mm. Like the show that we did 2 weeks ago was in a city that was about an hour and a half drive from here. But I think it's a bigger city. I'm not really sure the population wise, but they had 60 people in the room. And that other brewery show that I was just talking about, they, every time I went there, whether I was doing the open mic or doing like the show part of it, there's like 50 or 60 people there.
Nice.
That's cool. That's a fun show.
Yeah. I ran a show, every month when I was in Vietnam and, we did that for 3 or 4 years, between me and my friend. And we sometimes do shows for like 4 people. I remember doing a show where me and my friend, were both doing 30 minutes. And, so these people show up, they're like, when's the show start? We're like, well, we're waiting for people. Like, oh, we've got 2 people in here. And so we did this show and the people leave. And then like 2 people walk into the bar. They're like, hey, did the comedy show already happen? Because we're a little bit late. And I looked at my friend. I'm like, let's do it again. So we did. We did the same show a second time for another 2 people.
Hell yeah.
That's cool.
So that was pretty strange.
Yeah, I got 2 bookings tonight.
I love it.
I did the same set.
Nobody knew.
Yeah, nobody even knew, except maybe the bartender. The bartender probably knew.
Well, she was another comedian. Like she had.
Oh, I nice. Guess,
I don't know how she made all this money. Like she so there was a guy that was running like our main open mic, and he was going to leave the country, so he like passed it on to somebody else, and this girl had like just started doing it. And he passed it to her And then after like 6 months, she basically quit her teaching job and was just promoting shows, like different kinds of shows around the city. And that's how she made her money for every month.
Wow.
That is so cool.
That is really cool. Hell yeah. Turned it around, like made it into like a legitimate business.
Yeah. And then she went home and didn't do anything with it for a long time. And then I seen like she's doing shows now and stuff like that. But it's like you learn, we learned a lot of experience, you know. So there's a lot of bars, there's a lot of restaurants. So you do a show and it was bad and they ask you not to come back, you know, it's pretty easy to go find another place. So everybody did a couple of screw up shows, you know.
That's, I can't imagine like doing a show so bad where they go, oh, never come back here. By the way, you can't even order a drink anymore.
Damn.
If you're walking by, cross the street.
Dang.
We don't want your kind over here.
Right? All because your jokes are bad.
Oh,
Like I like
because
you, but
yeah,
don't come
you
back
bump so hard
here.
in front of two
You
people.
embarrassed me.
You bumped so hard in front of two people twice.
I
I
told
mean,
those two customers you were going to
you did drink more beers than every person in the bar
check.
combined, but we don't want you to come back.
Ouch.
So, what are some goals you have for your comedy? Some like man, if you can manifest a couple of things for yourself going into the future.
Well, I recorded a 1 hour special on like the day before my birthday this year,
Wow, where did you record that?
in Vietnam.
That's cool.
Ooh.
At like a club or a bar or
Well, it was
your
my
living
monthly
room.
show that we did. So we had the venue. They just let us do whatever we want. Once a month, we could have a show.
Wow,
Um,
that's
so I
cool.
just made the show into my special.
Hell yeah, that's awesome.
So it went pretty well. Like, I mean, of course I missed lines and fumbled through stuff and totally just like for the first 10 minutes, I'm like, I really did forget everything I was supposed to say. I'm gonna look at my list. Okay, that's probably not professional.
Well, that's what editing is for, you know?
Yeah.
You're,
So,
I record this hour special and now it's 10 minutes.
yeah. I think it's total 71 minutes total. And the guy, like, so at the beginning of the year, my plan was to do like a 5 country tour, you know, like go to Singapore, Malaysia, Thailand, Cambodia, and Vietnam. And that was like back when I think lockdown happened, and I was like, I'm gonna do it. My goal for this year is gonna be to do a five country tour. And then we got locked down and I didn't do it. And then after lockdown happened or was over with, I was like, yeah, that's what I'm gonna do. I need to start saving money to plan this all out and contact people and see what kind of dates and stuff I could get. And then I had to come home. So I didn't get to do that. So that would be something I would want to do, like a road comic. But
Yeah, that'd be a road comic, but traveling countries.
Yeah.
How many countries have you performed in?
I went to an open mic in Malaysia. I performed more than once in Cambodia, and Vietnam. That's it.
That's cool. That's about how many states I've performed in.
Well, like I didn't even think about it. Like, I landed in Bangkok and they got a pretty big tourist street. And I wasn't like the tourist street is basically just bars. And you know, you just like, what did you do while you were traveling? I just drank in different bars. I mean, it wasn't anything like special, you know. I went to the beach, but you know, I did this, I did that. But mainly it was just going to the bar and drinking every day. Oh, it's time for lunch. Let's go get some beers. Like Vietnam, I got to Vietnam, and this is one of the reasons I think I stayed because the beers were 40 cents.
Like
you
Holy
could
crap.
go to the bar and almost get 3 beers for a dollar. And I was like, this is good for my liver.
That is really cool, though. 40 cents for a beer,
Holy
man.
shit.
They
Damn.
weren't like the quality beers, but it was
Did the job.
yeah, after five of them, like you're pretty good.
Right, spending $3,
Yeah.
including a tip.
No, then you don't have to tip there.
Oh,
I
dang.
mean, you can, but I was like, no, and that's not a custom thing here in this country. I'm not gonna do it.
Yeah, you got to live the way they live.
Like the first bar that I drank at, that like I stopped at the gas, and they're not like it wasn't a gas station, but I stopped at the store and I bought 2 beers because I figured that would be the cheapest rather than trying to go into a bar alone. And I don't like going into places alone, so I just bought beers and I was just walking around the street drinking them. And this guy's like, "We got the cheapest beer in town, 40 cents." I'm like, "Okay, I'm coming here." And I came there for like. I probably went there every day for like the first year.
Oh yeah.
That's cool.
Did they have the cheapest bar, the cheapest drinks in town?
Pretty much, but it was like it wasn't like the greatest place to go drink. But it was fun.
Oh.
That's cool, man. That's cool. Well, I think that if anybody can do a world tour like that, I think you can. I think
Hell yeah.
you already know that you can get around from country to country. You know how to do it and stuff like that. So that's super cool.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Should
And
make that happen.
there would be other people that came as well. So like there was a lot of good like opportunities for you to like progress as a comedian. Like I did shows. I probably screwed up a bunch of them. But I wouldn't say that I learned from my mistakes, but I learned. So there was shows, we did all kinds of shows. You could do your own show, so you learn how to deal with like sound and all the setting up and making a flyer and all this stuff. And then like a certain time of year, there would just be a bunch of touring comedians that would come through and they would get passed along from somebody else. They're like, "Hey, do you know anybody in Vietnam who does comedy shows?" "Oh yeah, I got this person, this person, and this person." And then you just contact that person, and typically they would just be like, "Yeah, you get a spot."
I love
And not even ask for a video. They're like, "Oh, you've been on Comedy Central before? Okay, you can have a fucking hour. We don't care." So we're meeting like touring comedians. I seen Doug Stanhope in Vietnam.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, there's all kinds of things that we were getting to do and learning. This one guy, a couple of them came through and did like free courses on hosting and
Ooh.
things like that. So
Wow,
that
that's
was
cool.
cool. We were always getting like opportunities to do cool things. Like people who just started comedy, could open for, somebody, and now you got like a name on your press kit for the future if you ever, want to do something with it.
Okay.
That's awesome. That's awesome. It sounds like it was a good place to go and learn for a few years.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
And it was cheap. That was, again,
The best part.
Oh, yes.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been super fun talking to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
You want to plug social media or anything else?
Jeremy Wagner Comedian, I think, is my YouTube. That's really it.
Hell yeah. You can find me across the board at Funky Sam Medina. And
Sorry, I was yawning for a second.
You can find old Yanni Bear here over at She Shines For You,
Yeah, all
all
spelled
spelled out,
out,
no
no
numbers,
numbers.
and everything else is at Hypothetical Comedy. Awesome, Jeremy. Thank you so much.
Awesome, guys. Thanks.